When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day. Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian.
I'm excited too.
Why is that?
Because we're back to some a little bit of familiarity in our shows.
Well, yeah, we should probably explain the situation. So we are still doing the Daily Dose, and the Daily Dose is a show that Janice and I do on Everyday Health's YouTube channel, right? And so you'll get every single day at noon a segment that we do. And it's on the same kind of topics: fitness, nutrition, lifestyle, wellness, celebrity interviews, expert interviews, all of that. But it was kind of like difficult for us because originally we tried to tape the podcast
at the same place.
Yeah. And it just didn't work because we were doing visual stuff for the video cast, the Daily Dose. And then you guys would listen and it didn't make sense. And it was the same stuff. And we didn't want you guys listening to the same stuff.
No.
We value your time.
Do.
Yeah, and we want to give you more, always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because this is our start.
Yeah. So, here's what we're doing, just to make this clear. We're doing separate shows. So, the podcast that you're listening to right now remains the same, and the content on here will be completely separate, other than you will get snippets of the celebrity and the expert interviews that we do, and the remainder of that interview will exist on our YouTube show, The Daily Dose.
Right.
But other than that, there's not going to be crossover. So, yeah, there you go. What do you think, Janice?
Well, yeah, and
Jake is back!
Jake, son of Bruce Paul.
Yeah, we were having a real hard time without the son of Bruce Paul.
Yeah, so he's back. Well, he's here. We've come back to him.
That's right.
Because we're in two different studios now.
Yeah, two different studios.
And we can come in our underwear.
Thank God.
Thank God.
Because not that we couldn't do that on the other show.
I know, but you know,
I remember your bra.
Well, you know, the producers over there were a little bit more strict. I have not been into a strict environment.
Well, you like farted on a lighter.
I did.
And
I farted and I...
And we tried to light it on fire, Jake, and then Michelle Finucci.
Were you successful?
No, because I didn't have enough gastric wealth inside me.
Yeah.
But I must say, I think we should do that. You know what? That reminds me. I want to do a new segment for the podcast called, this is called Things We Weren't Allowed to Do on the Video Cast.
I like it.
But
yeah.
You know, the thing is, they're getting way more accepting of that sort of irreverence on the video cast now because they think it's funny. So, you know, you never know, Jake. Your day of lighting flatulence on fire on video is probably not far off.
See? Well, you know,
I have been successful at that in my younger days.
Really?
Yes.
See, I told you. You were so shocked.
I thought that was an urban legend.
Completely possible.
No
Completely.
Kidding. Please don't. Let's put the caveat out there. Please don't try that at home.
No, it is dangerous.
Because watch, I'm going to get sued now because somebody tried to light their gas on fire because of the two of you. And say they heard it on this podcast, which will subsequently ruin my career.
Do you seriously think it's new? Do you know how long people have been lighting their farts? Forever.
What?
It's just because you have
Since
lived
fire
a shelter.
Was invented.
I believe the
caves are idiots.
The cavemen used to say,
no,
and
no.
And then they used to take the torch and lift up their rug skin toga
no.
with the torch. And That's all of a sudden,
oh my God.
Elk would come running.
Do you mind if we do a show?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So coming up later in the show, we've got part of an interview that I did with Danica Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you guys already know the deal. You can see the rest of the interview on The Daily Dose, which exists on Everyday Health's YouTube channel. But she said something so interesting because it's no secret that Danica has gotten off to a bit of a rough start in NASCAR. In IndyCar, which was what she was doing before NASCAR, there is no, quote, rubbing is racing, right? They don't hit each other. That's not part of that. If you do, you will die. Like, you cannot bump cars in IndyCar. But in NASCAR, that's what they do. They slam into each other and drive each other into the wall. And it's serious, obviously. And every time she gets in that car, she runs a health risk, despite the fact that NASCAR has taken all precautions. Let's be honest. You know, they're slamming into each other at 180 or whatever miles an hour. It's dangerous. And she's had several bad accidents in her career, and one recently at Daytona. And I had asked her, I was like, how do you get back in the car? You know, when I saw that crash in Daytona, and she talked about faith, her faith, and how she essentially gets in the car and just gives it to God. And I've always been a huge believer in being proactive, right? You dot every I, you cross every T, and there's that old, have you ever heard that story about the guy who's, there's a flood and he's swimming, right? And he's treading water and people come along in little boats and they're like, hey, you know, get in, man. And he's like, no, God's going to save me. Have you heard this?
What's the fable of this, though?
I can't remember, but basically the guy's like treading water, right? And like four different people in boats come along and they're like, get in. And he's like, nope, God's going to save me.
Wasn't God in one of the boats?
Well, no, well, so he dies, he drowns and he goes to heaven and he's like, God, why didn't you save me? And he's like, I sent four boats.
People. That's right.
And so, you know, it's like, isn't that old adage that God helps those who help themselves? It's true. You definitely have to make the effort and do the work. There's no question about that. With that said, though, there's such a freedom that comes with the ability at that point. And we've talked about it before, about surrendering but not quitting. You know, letting mm-hmm. it go, letting things go. And even though you're letting them go and you're surrendering it to the universe to sort of figure it out and what will be, there's a real power in faith. And we've also talked about how believing in something, whether it's your kids or your career or your God, whatever it might be, helps to drive you, helps to bring that meaning into your life. But that faith, and again, I'm not talking, it doesn't have to be Jesus, it doesn't have to be the Buddha, it doesn't have to be Muhammad or whatever, whoever. It doesn't have to be God, it could be if you're an atheist, your family, whatever it is. But that also, more so, faith in yourself and what your true calling is here. And I think that when you're in your truth, for her truth is race car driving. Mm-hmm. That's her gift. She's been brilliant at it since she was 10 years old. For me, my truth is helping people live better. That's my truth, right? Your truth, Janice, I mean, you have a ton, but you're funny, you're smart, you're talented, you're a fantastic producer. And I think when you're in your truth and you're doing everything you can do, it really helps me to let go of the anxiety and the worry and the stress by saying, at this point, I've positioned myself as best as possible. I'm doing what I love to do. I'm living my passion out. And if it doesn't work, it's not meant to work.
Mm-hmm. Totally believe that. It's not meant to be.
It's not meant to be.
Yeah.
And you can always look back and connect the dots, right? You can always look back at your life and go, wow, now I see why that didn't work. Because if it did, it wouldn't have teed me up for this opportunity. And I have this story that I wrote about in my book, Unlimited. And There was a job that I had thought for sure I was going to get, right? And it was on a VH1 show called Flab to Fab. And I had just opened up my new gym, my sports medicine facility. And I thought for sure I was going to get it. And they were shooting me with the host, and all my clients had written all this stuff for me. And like, she's the best. And to make a long story short, they did not hire me. And I was humiliated. And every trainer in town knew, and all my clients knew. And I didn't know that Biggest Loser was ever going to come along. You know, there was no, I was like, oh, I blew it. And that was such a good opportunity to promote the gym. And I was wrecked, and I felt like the biggest failure. I wasn't the most evolved at 27. I was working on it, but I wasn't the most evolved. And I just, my ego was shattered, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Less than a year later, the opportunity for Biggest Loser came up. Had I gotten the job, the VH1 job, I couldn't have taken Loser because I would have been exclusive to VH1. The Flab to Fab show lasted, I don't even think it made it 2 seasons. Biggest Loser launched my whole career. So at that point, right, there comes that place where you just got to have faith that if it's the right thing, it will be. If it isn't the right thing and you fail or you fall down or it falls apart, we've talked about this before, find the lesson in it, find the meaning, and then really believe in yourself that if you're doing what you're meant to do, it's going to work out.
Yeah, it's like, and it's shutting everything off. It's like, I always say a prayer. I say, God, keep my eyes clear so I can see what I'm supposed to see. Keep my ears open so I can hear what I'm supposed to hear, and keep my mind shut off, like shut the squirrel cage off so I can understand what I'm supposed to take in. It's just,
I love that.
If you can clear all the crap out, it's there.
But
we have all these filters on. It's crazy.
And that's what I love so much. That's really what we're saying. Cause I thought, like, how is this woman getting back in this car after she got slammed into a wall at 180 miles an hour? I would be thinking, oh my gosh, my kids, my family, my everything. What if I die? What if I'm paralyzed? And she doesn't. She gets in the car and she's like, you know, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
Because she's doing what she's supposed to be doing.
I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Totally.
And that's all. Think about it. And just know that when you're in your truth, the number one thing I want you to have faith in is yourself. Because when you're in your truth, it's all going to work out the way it's meant to. You just need to have faith in that. And I hope that helps you release a little worry and some anxiety.
All right, so.
Yeah?
Woo! Coming up.
Okay.
Danica.
Dun-dun-dun-dun. Stick around. We are ready for the siege. We are armed up to the teeth. Yeah. Okay, so we're here with my good friend, which I love to say, and of course, probably the most famous race car driver in the world, Danica Patrick.
Thank you.
I mean, arguably the most famous, I think we can say without a doubt. And you may have caught the interview I did with Danica at Fontana for The Insider, but in case you didn't, I'm going to do a little recap. We've been talking a lot about what's been going on in NASCAR and the sexist comments made by a Fox News anchor and the fact that he was suspended for the things that he said or implied about you. But the reality is, you know, I know you and I know your love for racing. But buddy, I mean, if there's a feminist movement at all alive in the world, you are the front of it, whether you wanted to be or not. And I mean, you have transcended racing. People that don't know anything about racing, people that don't know anything about NASCAR, people that don't know anything about motorsports, they're talking about you right now. Women are talking about you right now, coming up to me, asking me about you because they know I know you through our...
Because we're friends.
Go, Daddy.
Because we're buddies.
I always wanted to be friends with the coolest girl in school, and now I am. And I mean, you've just become this enormous icon and role model for women who aspire to be better.
Stop. My head's not going to fit out the door.
I'm being truthful right now. I mean, I'm proud to know you. I'm slightly envious. I'm like, wow, this is incredible. And
please,
how does this make you feel?
You might be the strongest woman I know.
Okay. I love you for that. But really, I mean, what's going on with you right now is major. How do you feel about this? I know this wasn't your... attention. Well, definitely coming into NASCAR, it's a big platform. There's a lot of media. We race every weekend with lots of media every weekend. And, you know, the year starts off with such a big kick at Daytona. So, you know, a lot gets out there. There's a lot of interviews done. And I guess it's inevitable that one of them is going to get people talking, I guess.
Yeah, but you have become such a source of inspiration for the modern woman. Is that something that you expected? And how do you feel about that? Have you fully processed that? I don't know that you have. I know you just like to get, you like to race your car, but it's beyond that
now. I feel like I'm a little too young to completely understand what that means and what that means exactly. What are the actions being that are taken because of the things that I'm doing, or what are the conversations that happen because of what I'm doing or because of what I say? I don't think I completely understand it. I just know from my perspective, I've always tried to be very authentic and tried to just be who I am. And it keeps my job pretty easy when I just get to be myself and not have to play too much of a role, really. You know, I don't know. What are people saying about me? What do people think?
Well, I mean, I've, of course, done my research for our interviews, and I will tell you that wherever your name is brought up, there are women that are immediately up in arms. And, for example, if we were to talk about the Fox News anchor that was suspended, so you were commenting on the fact that you were doing an interview, I believe it was for NASCAR?
It was NASCAR Media Day.
NASCAR Media Day. And they said, oh, you know, you're so sexy. And you said, yeah, gosh, in a very self-deprecating way, I wish people wouldn't refer to me as sexy. I wish they'd maybe use the word pretty or why sexy.
Yeah, I think that's – I was saying that I am sexy sometimes. I, you know, that is the way to – that is the right word in certain situations. GoDaddy commercial situation,
right?
And that could definitely be used as a descriptive word. But I said, why do you always have to use that word? Can't you come up with any other words that describe me other than just sexy? Like, why do you throw a blanket over female athletes in particular? Was what I was talking about. Is just like, you know, why do you just call them sexy if they, you know, don't just wear their driver uniform? So. Or their outfit, wherever it is that they're, whatever sport they're playing. So I said, don't you ever have any other words to describe me? Like, maybe it's today it's strong, or, you know, another day it's determined, or another day it's like beautiful or woman or something like that. It's always like there always has to be with me. Seems I feel like always just like sex is part of the description of me.
Right.
And it is part of it, but in certain scenarios, it's, I don't feel like it's as, it doesn't fit as well. That's all.
Well, and sometimes it's not relevant.
And I'm playing with fire when I talk about this, so.
I don't think you are at all.
I don't know.
Why would anybody want to be just described as sexy when
because
there is so much
more to you?
Out
of context. That's why. Because sometimes things get taken out of context, and instead of hearing the full version, I was at an appointment, and you know, surely for my hair or something, and they were like, somebody walked in and said that they heard you say that you don't want to be called sexy, and she was like, my girl, she was like, I don't think that probably would be true, and the person that said the story had happened, she's like, yeah, but because she does those GoDaddy commercials and because she, you know, she's sometimes in swimming suits. And so I was like, okay, yes, it implies to some situations, but it's not always me. And that's what I was saying is that why do you always have to just use that word? Come up with something that's more accurate in the situation. So that's why I'm saying it's dangerous, is because it can be taken out of context.
Well, it won't be taken out of context here.
Yeah.
Because I've been taking.
Because we're buddies.
I know that little trick because it's been played on
you know,
me before.
For sure. You
oh,
know
no,
where
I know
I'm
the out
from.
Of context trick. And that's not my game. I would much rather
I
people get to know who you really are and be inspired by the things that you can teach them and show them than set you up.
But you know the danger in the real world of talking about
sure
these things
do.
And how scary it can be. Like some people can manipulate it. So
I do.
But I'm glad. I just think that, you know, I wanted to remind people that I'm more than just that or I'm not only that. And
of
that's
course,
a
and
role
not.
I play at times.
So, this Fox News anchor, right, coming back to the story, he comes out of the clip of you saying that, and he goes, oh, Danica, you always have a chip on your shoulder. People always project. Isn't that funny? Like, as he's attacking you, it's like, who has the chip on the shoulder, buddy? You always have a chip on your shoulder. I can think of a word to describe you. Starts with B, and it's not beautiful. And the female?
Bolsterous,
yes. Exactly.
Bold, right.
Yeah. The female anchor immediately puffed out her chest, and she goes, no, wait a minute. She's like, she's a strong female breaking into a man's world, and she has every right, and started to kind of take up your cause without even, you know, obviously nothing was instigated. It was just very organic for her. And the reality is that what you see in that Fox News segment, you're seeing in blogs, message boards, comments on articles, in the streets. Women just feel like they are, you're making a statement about what we can do as a gender, what we can do as people.
You're empowering me right now. High five. Good job.
Danica.
Because I don't even know what happened necessarily.
You're in the mix, though.
I know what happened, but I don't really know what happened in the world of conversation and perception and dialogue and, you know, where does it go from here and what that really means internally to someone. So if someone defends me, I'm appreciative, but second off, it probably says that there are other people that have experienced something similar where they are pigeonholed into one kind of descriptor for them. And especially, I think, as women, I think that tends to be a common descriptor for us.
Yes, it absolutely does. Now, here's what I love the most about you is that right now you stand for so much for so many people, and yet you're just a woman who does what you love and has always done what you love. So can you talk a little bit about how you got into racing?
Well,
and why?
I was a wee little girl. I'm only this tall now, but about that tall. I was 10 years old, and we were looking for something to do together as a family. I have one other sister. She's 2 years younger than me. And so we were looking for something to do together as a family. My dad worked. My mom stayed home to take care of us. So we didn't really know my dad very well. He was gone before we got up, and he got home after, you know, we went to bed. So, which meant my mom must have been putting us to bed at like 6 p.m. But thanks,
she'd
Mom, I guess.
She'd had enough.
It didn't help me grow, but I'm sure I was well rested. So, you know, it was just a way to spend time together. And we originally were going to get a boat. How about that? We were going to get a nice little pontoon boat and float down the Rock River in Illinois. But I don't know. So for some reason, they must have lost that voicemail that we left for him. So, so we bought go-karts. And my dad had been in racing all of his life. He started out racing snowmobiles, or actually I think he started with motocross, and then he did snowmobiles and then midget cars on dirt ovals. So anyway, he's got tons of racing experience. It's definitely a passion of his. So we started racing go-karts, my sister and I. Yeah.
And you were?
I was 10.
Exactly.
My sister was 8. My sister retired early in her year, and she was about 8 years old. And then my mom did it for a while. So my mom and I did it. And then my mom stopped after a year or two. And then it was just me. And we did it to spend time together. But then all of a sudden, I left home at 16 and moved to England. And then I wasn't home anymore. So, but it's been amazing. I think about, I was just talking to my dad on the phone today, and he said, it's my birthday. The 25th is my birthday. And so 30 big ones. And so,
whoa.
Yeah.
Getting
so he's
there.
So he was having that sort of, yeah, I know. So he was having that sort of reflective, like, oh my gosh, time has gone by. And he says, you know, do you feel 30? And I said, I kind of do. I mean, you know, the time flies, sure, but I can think back to 5 years ago, and I can think back to what I was doing 5 years before that, and 5 years before that, and all of a sudden that adds up to 30. And you know what? I've done a lot of really cool stuff in my life, and I lived in a lot of places, and I've experienced a lot of things. And you know, you probably experienced something similar, is that every couple of years you're like, wow, I can't believe I'm here now.
Yeah.
And so it gives you a lot of moments in time that you can think back to. It's not a blur. It's not like one constant life. It's been an ever-evolving, changing life. So, yeah. So
what does 30
anyway
feel like?
I'm not. I think 30 is going to be the best. I think my 30s are going to be the best. That's what my dad told me anyway. He's like, I think it's the best years because, you know, you've got some money finally. Right. You've got some perspective. You're young enough to do dumb things, but you're not too dumb to do all of them. And, you know, you kind of get to experience maybe some of the greatest things in life in your 30s, I think.
Now,
I think. I hope so. My life's been pretty good so far. But I think that you also get a little more at peace with things.
I think you're right about it. I'm, unfortunately for me, well into my 30s. And it has been the best decade. Because I do think you do have a better sense of yourself. You are a little more at peace. I don't feel the need to prove myself as much as I did when I was in my earlier 20s. Because you've got that success, so you can stand on it.
Sure. And you're like, read my bio.
Yes, that's exactly right. That is exactly right.
Yeah, so I'm excited. But there's been a lot of things that have happened in my life, for sure.
Now,
a lot of cool stuff.
Tell me, going into this line of work, this is a passion. And a lot of times people feel like, well, if I love it, it's not work. I shouldn't do it. I need a responsible job. I need to do the 9-to-5. I have to go to college and follow that traditional path, which, by the way, 9 times out of 10 makes them miserable. Mm. And was there anybody that encouraged you to continue following your passion and make a career out of it? Or was there anyone that discouraged you in the opposite direction? How did that play out for you? Key players in that path.
My parents were probably the biggest contributors to me taking the path that I did and leaving school at 16 and getting my GED and living in England by myself and racing, and because they recognized. And what's funny is that I was at a little 8 to 10 year old girls baseball game, and I sponsor my niece, and so. Her team, anyway. They're the Green Machines. They have green shirts, like Go Daddy Green, and they've got checkered flag socks. And so I went to a game just, you know, to support them. And you can recognize players that have some talent, and you and others don't, you know. And when you're young and you're in the middle of it, you don't really think to yourself, wow, she's got it, you know. You're just playing. So, but when you're older, you go, wow, she's got something for this game. She knows what she's doing. She has coordination and talent. And my parents said that when I was young, my dad especially said that he saw it in me very young that I could do it. So I guess that, you know, at a really young age, it just shows. Like, either you can or you can't. Either you have a talent or you don't. And at a young age, I guess I showed that. And so, and I think that it's hard for kids, you know. Sometimes parents limit their kids at what they do. Sometimes they're scared for them. Sometimes they don't let them try things. I was lucky. My parents let me try everything when I was a kid. I did volleyball, basketball, cheerleading, band, choir, track, tumbling. I mean, I played coach pitch when I was a kid. So, you know, like, I played in every sport. And that's what it takes to find what you love. So, you know, people need to be brave enough to try, and parents need to be open enough to let their kids try things, because for crying out loud, it'd be pretty normal if my parents didn't let me race go-karts. But they did, and that was it.
It's so interesting you say that. I was at a nursery school the other day, and they said, you know, this place isn't for everybody. And I was like, and it seemed like utopia to me. And I said, well, why isn't it for everybody? This place seems amazing.
I want to play.
And the kids were running around, right? It's in the mountains. And they said, well, some parents don't like their kids to fall. And I thought, well, when they fall, don't they realize that they then get back up and that they're not permanently broken?
Isn't that like a very common sort of cliche saying? What do we do when we fall? We get right back up.
We get right back up. But these parents have sheltered their kids so much. So these would be the parents that wouldn't encourage them, I guess, to do the go-kart racing, to take the chances, to try new things and put themselves out there. But it's as I'm reading about parenting strategies, it's like, let your kids fall down. It's okay. They'll get hurt, but they'll realize that they'll go on. They'll be okay. And they'll be brave enough to experiment and try new things. That's very interesting that your dad did that with you. Yeah. Dad and your mom did that with you.
And then at the same time, recognizing the talent, and I only learned this in the last year or two, I feel like, from him. But he took me to the next level when he saw that I was
accomplishing all the goals and winning all the races. And he didn't just sort of bathe in that success and keep going and keep going. He took me to the next level and challenged me. And to recognize something in your child and nurture it a little bit, and, you know, it'd be no different than putting, you know, blocks in front of your kid and then getting your kid baby genius, you know, and trying to take them to the next level and trying to get them to learn. It's the same thing with sports. And that's what my parents did with me in sports, is they recognized that I was good at racing. And so the opportunity of moving to England and being able to race over there and sort of the mecca of racing was an opportunity that they didn't feel that they were happy to, you know, to let me do, because it was, they said that it would be much more sad if you didn't have the opportunity than to let you go. You know, to worry about letting you go, it's be worse if you didn't have the chance. So
would you say that your dad was your greatest mentor? Or
yeah, I would say so. I mean, I've learned the most from him, just from everything from basic mechanics to, you know, I sure as heck don't work on my race car now, but I did used to work on my go-kart. And
I've seen them work on your race car. That is unbelievable. You have to be like the superhero Flash there. Bam, car's down, you're up.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and working in, yeah. So cars are hot, jeez, brake discs are hot, and they're just working away. Way and
tires are flying. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember when I moved to England and I was 16 and I said, do you want me to help you? Because that's where I was from. Like, I just came from go-karting. I'm like, you know,
crazy.
They look at me, they're like, you know, with their English, they're like, no, you're the driver. You can go over there with the mechanics. We'll work on the car. And I was like, all right, fine. Sure. I'll go get a cup of coffee. I was probably drinking hot chocolate back then, I guess.
Right. Right.
But,
all right. I have to ask you this. Watching you at Daytona slam into that wall, that was upsetting for me as your friend. Truly upsetting, only because, like, you know, Robin is racing. Really? When someone dies, is it still racing? I'm as your friend, I'm worried about you. Are you worried about you? Is your husband worried about you? Is your family worried about you? Like, am I overthinking this? This looks very scary to me and dangerous.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm hoping first. I'm hoping that I won't really crash much more anymore, because my first, in IndyCars, when I first started, my first race in an IndyCar, I had the biggest crash I ever had in an IndyCar. And then in stock cars, and in specifically in Sprint Cup, my very first Sprint Cup race was the biggest crash I've had in a stock car yet. So hopefully it's out of the way, because I crashed a lot, not very much in IndyCar. I ended up having the longest streak of finishes for a driver. It was some 50-ish, it was 50 races in a row or something, which is a couple of years. Luckily that happened. In NASCAR, it's a little, sometimes things are a little out of your control.
Well, yeah,
control.
You're not crashing.
Exactly.
You're being crashed out.
Yeah, you get crashed
you
out a lot.
You are
more.
Getting crashed out.
But I'm still hopeful that they won't be big anymore. But, you know, the series always works on safety. That's for sure.
Okay.
That wall that I hit was a safer barrier. It was a safer barrier wall, which means that there's a wall, there's foam behind it, so it absorbs some of the energy, and it's not like hitting a brick wall. It's like hitting a soft brick wall. So anyway.
Soft brick wall.
It didn't mean it didn't hurt, and it didn't mean that it wasn't a really, really hard, fast hit. But it is racing. Unfortunately, sometimes things happen. Sometimes drivers think that they have the room that they don't have, or they think that they can go in certain places where there's not room. They get excited and things happen. I'm sure I'll be guilty of it at some point too.
I hope you will.
But it is part of it. And
I hope you will, because I saw your Bristol and you gave a little. You're giving as good as you get.
Oh, thank you. Are watching?
No, dude, I'm following. I'm not kidding. And it's not just me. I told you, it's all my friends.
You're like,
that
really?
Don't
how
watch
long
NASCAR.
Have I been sitting?
We
here?
All like have our thing now. Like, we go and we sit at this little bar in this place called Cafe Havana, and we like watch. It's ridiculous. Me and like 15 of my female friends, but which aww. I digress. But so the fear now, is there no fear? How are you managing the fear? Because I know for me, you know, when I snowboard, for God's sake, I'm afraid I'm going to fall and break something.
This is a whole other ballgame.
We do have helicopters waiting by to take us to airports near, or hospitals nearby. There's no helicopter
You're made of
waiting
different
for
stuff,
you,
buddy.
The,
You're made of different stuff.
But the funny thing is I'm scared of so many other things. Let's just list them. It takes two hands. I'm scared of heights. I'm scared of water that I can't see through. I'm scared of the dark. I'm scared of bugs. I'm scared of... I've all of a sudden become scared of planes a little bit, only, which is a really bad thing because I fly all the time. But my husband got his pilot's license years ago, and it made me realize that it's not just like autopilot. It is actually a job. And so anyway, now all of a sudden I'm like, things get rough and I'm feeling like, you know, shoot, do a good job, do a good job.
I hope
wait,
that
hang on.
Well
I said
qualified.
I promised two hands.
The
planes
did.
Is kind of a new one. What else? Those are five good ones, though. Dark, heights, water. I'm scared of ghosts, too. I feel like there are ghosts.
I'll tell you right now.
I roll over. I used to look at the clock in the middle of the night, and when I started seeing 3 o'clock every time, I stopped looking.
Okay. All right. So, fair enough. You have your fair share of fears, but you definitely manage this one, which is potentially life-threatening in a completely very real way.
I'm not scared of wild animals, though. I desperately want to pet a bobcat.
Well, so, I want to ask you then. You're not afraid of speed, you're not afraid of crashing, you're not afraid of bobcats. Does faith play any part in your ability to continuously step into that car and hit the road in that way?
Yeah, the answer is yes. I became Catholic when I met my husband in the year we were engaged. So I was confirmed before we got married, and... you know, I think it just gives you a sense of, like, handing your problems to someone else, handing your fate to someone else a little bit, to God. And like
surrendering.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And just saying whatever happens, happens. And you pray for the best. You pray for safety. And shoot, might even pray to do well sometimes. But I always figure if I do well, I didn't crash. So I figure it's sort of like a prayer all in one. But it does. It gives me a little bit more peace out there that what's going to happen is going to happen, and that there's a path we're all on, and I just pray that I do a good job with it, and that I'm smart, and that I use the talents that I have and that I was given, and the rest is what it is.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate
it.
Okay, so we are back, and if you want to hear the other half of Danica's interview,
yeah,
which you do,
fill in the blanks,
which is really interesting, which is really cool. You can go to the
our podcast.
The Daily Dose is the podcast. Go to the Daily Dose.
Okay, and fill in the blanks is essentially when I ask celebrities open-ended questions like I love ... I hate ... I'm most proud of. So we think you're really going to love it. To see the rest of it, go to the Daily Dose. And here is the URL for that channel. bit.ly/JM YouTube channel. Or you could all probably Google the Daily Dose and find it. But anyway,
yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Okay, you ready for the next segment?
Uh-huh, I am.
Okay, Janice is going to love this because it's a fitness segment, but it's not on camera, so I don't do anything mean to her.
Yeah.
Bummer. And I wanted to really just give you some tips in the event that you might have an exercise affliction of sorts, like swimmer's ear, knee pain when you jog, back pain.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So here are some natural things you can do to help combat various issues that might occur when you're exercising. So the first one we'll start out with is swimmer's ear. I don't know if you guys have, anyone's ever gotten this, but basically it's when you get that excess moisture in your ear and you know you have too little earwax. It kind of throws off your ear's pH balance, which is kind of yuck as that sounds. It's really common, and it's actually very common for kids in particular. Kids always get ear infections. All my friends' little ones have ear infections all the time. They basically just get a bacterial infection. And one of the things you can do is take 0.25 milliliters of white vinegar and you just pop it right in your ear. Rubbing alcohol works as well, but vinegar is slightly less.
And just stick it in.
Yeah.
Drop
just
it
drop
in.
It in there. Leave it in there. Just let it kind of, you know, tilt your little head to the side. Let it kind of marinate in there. And what you want to do is repeat it twice a day for 2 days.
And then when you're done, you just, and you've made your salad for the night, you just go over and shake your ear into the salad. See? Like that. Like that. Like, just like that. See? See what I'm doing?
But it's not, but we're not, it's not the video cast. They can't actually see what you're doing. All right. Next one.
Yep.
Low back pain. Mm. You know what really helps with low back pain? 75% of the people who, there was a study, right? And it's in the Archives of Internal Medicine. 75% of the people that they followed who had low back pain did yoga, and they did it for 3 months, right? And they did it for 75 minutes at a time, 3 times a week. And 75% of them noticed a significant decrease in their amount of back pain. And the reason for this, couple of reasons. Number one, yoga is going to increase your flexibility. So a lot of times when you think, oh, my lower back is killing me, the truth of the matter is that it's probably your psoas that's tight, because your psoas comes and it wraps around your lower back. So for example, when I walk around New York for hours at a time, my low back will just lock up, and it's because I walk weird. I don't bend my knee properly, and this is, I this is me getting off. No, I used to get this crazy back pain, and then I would get like my hips would shift, and I would get an IT band thing. And so I ended up seeing a physical therapist, and they were like, you know, your psoas is extremely tight because you're walking wrong. You're not bending your knee enough. You're not activating your glutes. You're walking with your hips. So your psoas locks up and it wraps around into your lower back. And I could go on and on and on. But when I started doing yoga, because it's increasing my flexibility, and it was opening up my hips, and it was stretching out my psoas. In addition to that flexibility, how that's going to help your lower back, it also strengthens your core. So it builds up core strength to help you support your body. That's when the back can really begin to have problems, is when you're not, your muscles aren't engaged and you're not strong, and then you've got twisted discs and all kinds of slipped bulging discs and this and that, and all sorts of stuff happens. So the flexibility, the body alignment that yoga provides, and the core strength that it provides can really help with back pain. So if you've never done it before, obviously start out with a level 1-2 class. Very important. And of course, Janice and I did a whole segment on yoga on the Daily Dose. So if you want to hear more about that, check it out there. Moving on, muscle cramps. Now, this could be caused from a number of things. It could be, let's say you're running and you get a stitch. Well, that could be dehydration. So make sure that you're hydrated. Drink, I would say, 8 ounces of water about 30 minutes before you exercise. Just at least, you know, but don't, of course, do it right before you hit the treadmill, or it's going to give you a cramp. And don't eat. It could be because you've eaten before you jump on the treadmill or before you work out. And when you do, you know, your blood needs to go to the organs and your tummy and digest that food. Well, when you're exercising, you're sending that blood to the muscles. You're redirecting it, which can cause cramps. So make sure.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. So hydrate before you work out. In addition, potassium helps with muscle cramps. So if you're getting muscle cramps, have like a half a banana or a banana, you know, if you've got the calories, before you work out, about 45 minutes before, have your water. The potassium and the hydration should help your cramps. If you're not eating before, that should help with that stitch that you get in your side. And last but not least, this is kind of interesting. Another reason that so many of us get cramps when we train is poor circulation. And cinnamon is really great for circulation. So if you're having like oatmeal or cereal in the morning before you train, sprinkle cinnamon on your breakfast.
Love cinnamon.
And it helps. It's great. I mean, the health benefits go on and on, but it improves your circulation dramatically, and it essentially opens up your blood vessels and really helps to move things along. You know?
Yeah.
You get the idea.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Blood flow. Okay. Yeah. Another one, blisters. First of all, if you're getting blisters, like let's say you're getting them from your shoes, for example. Honestly, you probably need a new pair of shoes, but I've even had like, there are just days sometimes when I'm doing a certain kind of workout and it's aggravating me. Put Vaseline on your heels or wherever you're getting the blister, on the back of your ankle, because it helps decrease the friction.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What?
Well, I was just thinking.
You seem confused.
No, I was just thinking that sometimes if like the your thickness of socks too, like sometimes you need better socks.
That's true. I agree.
But the Vaseline, that makes sense.
And I do, yeah. But I the thing with the socks is they're not very fashionable.
Oh my gosh!
I don't like it when they stick out of my shoe. it's ugly.
You don't like a sock.
No, I like the little socks that you can't see.
Well, then you deserve a blister.
No, no, Janice. I want to look good and not have blisters.
Well, I wear crew socks, a nice healthy pair of crew socks, and I don't care.
And that's your problem. So, don't okay. we all know it?
But a little Vaseline on okay, but the friction areas.
Right, okay. But also, you want to make sure that it doesn't get infected once you have a blister. So something called calendula ointment. It's great. You can get it at any little health food store. You could probably actually find it at your drugstore, like a CVS. And it's antimicrobial. So it helps in the event when you have a blister. Put that on there with a little Band-Aid and it'll help prevent infection. Okay. Especially because this is going to sound yucky, but when you're at the gym, it's like just a petri dish for infection. MRSA and all kinds of stuff. That's another thing. If you have a cut, we've talked about this before, but if you have any sort of a cut anywhere and you go to the gym, you need to cover that.
Yeah.
You've got to cover it. I mean, I don't care if you're wearing long sleeves. I don't care if you wrap it in an ACE bandage. Cover that cut because that's just the perfect place for you to get something like MRSA, which is called methicillin-resistant staph aureus, which basically is a staph infection that is extremely resistant to antibiotics.
And oh my God, it spreads like wildfire.
Serious yeah. business. So not to scare you, but I'm just saying, be careful.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm just saying. Okay, runner's knee. Now, this can be caused by a bunch of different things. And it doesn't have to be runner's knee. It could be a shoulder issue. It could be a knee issue. It could be a wrist, elbow, whatever. But so many times we pop ibuprofen right away. That is not good for you. Terrible, terrible, terrible for your liver, obviously. And in addition, studies have shown that when you immediately go to like ibuprofen, Advil, those non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, it inhibits the progress you're making in the gym. Because what it does is it inhibits the healthy inflammatory response to your exercise, where the muscles essentially get a little bit swollen. There's little micro tears. We send nutrients and blood cells and all of this stuff to the muscles so they can rebuild and repair. Well, the NSAIDs affect that natural, your body's natural healing process and can actually inhibit your results. So when people are sore, I always say, like, really try not to take Advil if you're sore from a workout, because it's going to slow down the results you're getting. One of the things that you can do instead of that is acupuncture. It's so, honestly, I got to tell you, acupuncture, I had a shoulder injury years ago. Fell off of a horse. I think I may have told this story before. It was not my beloved Buzz or Charlie.
It was a rental.
It was, it's a long story. It was, yeah. So I was exercising this horse and it had been raining. And to make a long story short, I came off the horse and I was in the dirt and screwed up my shoulder. And this orthopedic surgeon was like, yeah. Right? You have yeah. a slap tear and this and that yeah. and the bone bruise. And a year and a half later, started getting acupuncture, changed my life. Never had surgery, have full use of my shoulder. And I've seen people use it for IT band issues, all kinds of stuff. So before, you know, look, if you need surgery on something because your meniscus is torn or what have you, that's one thing. But before you start popping Advil, try acupuncture, because it really, I don't fully understand the science of it. I wish that I did. But what I can tell you is that studies show it releases hormones like serotonin, cortisol, endorphins in the blood to help manage the pain and reduce inflammation. But there's a whole, you know, a whole thing. We're going to do a segment on the Daily Dose where you get it, Janice.
Oh, really? I've done it. I believe in it. Oh, and yeah. my dog is, I took my old dog,
you know,
Ellie, to.
Richard needs it. Can you tell me who, Richard has
yeah,
a pinched nerve.
I totally can tell you. They're awesome. And it helped her. It gave her, it really helped her a lot.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. We're so happy with ourselves today.
I know.
Awesome. 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 All right. You feel good about it, Jay, or you want more?
Have you got more?
I do have more.
Yeah, go for it.
But you get antsy sometimes.
Well, no, it's just if we do more, we might not have time for a call today. But that's okay.
Oh.
We do calls. We do calls all the time. But we should continue. I think you should continue.
All right, I'll make it quick. Okay. So interval training, right? There's different ways of doing it. There's Tabata training where you exercise for 20 seconds at a time, take 10 seconds off.
Tabata. Is that what that is?
Yes, that's what it is. I personally like 30-second intervals. Because studies will show you that somebody who is less fit will get more benefit out of 30-second intervals. Tabata is when you max out at like a rate of perceived exertion, like you go crazy at your 9 to 10, right? You're
max for 20 seconds and rest for 10. But you got to be an extreme athlete to do that.
Yeah, okay.
But it could be even you're doing 30-second intervals. You might even be doing one-minute intervals. The reality is that when you're interval training, you're essentially pushing yourself as hard as you can during that interval, and then you're resting. And it's great because it stresses out the body, and the body then needs to adapt with what we call stress adaptation response, and it speeds your results, and it boosts your metabolism, and it's fantastic. Love it, love it, love it, right? The only thing is, for many people, they think, oh my God, I can't do this. I'm going to die. It's too hard for me. But the truth is that after only like six sessions, I'm getting this exact information off of a study that was just done at the California State University. And basically what they said was they studied people who did intervals and they did them for 6 days in a row. And what interval training does is it boosts your muscle stores of glycogen and phosphocreatine, which are two fuels that your muscles use for intense exercise. So as you adapt to this intense exercise, your perceived effort declines. So even though you're still pushing and you're working harder, your perception of the effort, because your muscle's better able to fuel itself, declines. So the pain goes away. So you got to stick with it for 6 days. Don't give up.
God, our brains are so bizarre, eh? Our perception, you know, it's so bizarre.
It's mind over matter to a certain extent, but this is actually physiological. So with that said, 6 days and you're going to notice a big difference.
All right.
I feel good about it.
All right.
Can we do a call?
Very short, though.
Okay. I'll be quick.
Caller 911 time, and Anna Marie from Waianae, Hawaii.
Woo, good pronunciation. Anna Marie, what's going on?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my question.
Absolutely.
I just had a question about my 9-year-old son. He recently has started worrying a lot about his weight. He's also making comments to his younger siblings and to me about our weight, and we're all not overweight. He has started skipping meals, just eating a little bit, or deciding that he's just going to eat one piece of fruit, you know. And I've tried to emphasize with him healthy eating. We need energy from calories, which comes from food, and you know he gets plenty of exercise. So I don't want this to turn into an eating disorder, and I also don't want him to negatively affect his younger siblings by making. You know, comments to them about their bodies.
Got it. I understand. All right. So can we be candid? I need a little information.
Okay. Yes.
How tall are you? How much do you weigh?
5'5". I weigh 120.
Oh, you're skinny.
Yes. I'm in shape, and his younger siblings are all petite.
Wow. So, okay. Is he not in shape?
He is in shape. He has thickened up. I would say he's gone from like a child to more to a boy in the last year or so.
Okay.
But his stomach is flat. He just has
a little bit of baby fat.
He's a Pacific Islander, so he's gotten thick all of a sudden.
Okay.
In the last year. But he's not overweight. He doesn't have, you know, rolls or anything.
And he's picking this up at school, I'm presuming.
I don't know where he's picking it up from.
Right. You know, it's very funny. I've been talking to a lot of moms recently with boys that are 9 to 11, roughly, and they haven't gone through puberty, but yet they're, you know, just a little bit, they're soft, just a tiny bit, little bit of baby fat.
Right.
And more, we're seeing these young boys becoming incredibly self-conscious about their body and their body image. And it's kind of new because we've always associated this with young girls.
Exactly.
So moms in particular are like, whoa, I didn't see this coming.
Right. I know. I thought maybe my daughter one day might have a problem with this, but I never thought one of my sons would.
Yeah. Well, you're not alone. It's very common right now. Mm-hmm. Here are the things that you want to do.
Okay.
Number one, you just want to I'm sure he's picking this up at school.
Mm-hmm.
You want to constantly build his confidence.
Right.
Just as, you know, telling him how much you love him, emphasizing the things that he's good at and talented at. And keeping that, it's good, by the way, that he has that open line of communication with you, because you don't want this to go underground and manifest.
Right.
So it's like, honey, you know, you don't want to negate his feelings either. But what we want to do is just continue to build his self-esteem.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Number two is listening to him, hearing him out, listen to him and say, you know, sweetheart,
I don't see this, but I'm hearing that you feel this way. Mm-hmm. Tell me what's going on. Where is this coming from? See if you can get him to open it up, because you don't want to tell him he's crazy,
right?
Or he's going to think that you don't hear him.
Right.
You're telling him his feelings are crazy.
Yes.
So you're not saying, yes, you're overweight, but you're saying, you know, sweetie, I don't see it. I think you look beautiful and you look healthy, but tell me, where is this coming from? How are you feeling?
Okay.
See if you can get him to open up about that. And then talk to him, because you might say, like, is he, the next thing could be, there was a young boy that felt this way, and I looked at the kid, he was a healthy weight, he was a little bit soft, but he was a little unconscious, he wanted abs.
Right.
And so, you know, one of the things that the mom did, and I kind of gave her a little bit of advice on this, was help using this as an opportunity to get him to eat healthier. So
right.
She was like, you know what, sweetie, I mean, if you want to look like, you know, if you choose to look like, you know, this, or you want your, one of the things we could, is he drink soda? Does he eat sweets?
Yes. I try to emphasize really healthy eating with them, but I also try to balance it, because I know that they go to school and all the kids are, you know, either drinking the soda, they're eating the Spam and rice. And
then here's what you say. You say to him, you know what, sweetheart, I hear you. I mean, if this is something that's important to you,
right.
to you,
right.
Not, it's not you wanting him to change, to you.
Right.
You know, we can work out together. We can exercise together. And if you want, you know, and make it about the whole family, okay?
Right.
You know, we as a family can be a healthier family if you want. We can get rid of the sodas. We can get rid of the Spam and the rice. And then it's about him influencing the family in a positive way, mm-hmm. not about him being ostracized or
right.
he needs to change or you want to change him. And that's how I would go about it. So you use it as an opportunity to get him to eat healthier, but you make it his idea and something the whole family is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you continue to build his confidence and self-esteem. And you encourage that healthy dialogue and communication with him, because you want him to keep talking to you.
Right.
And then you make it about health, not about appearance and body image. All right, pal?
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
All right. That's it. We got to go.
Fine, I will go. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore, because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.